It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. There are 46 million people in the U.S. who are over 65, and many of them are on fixed incomes, perhaps living off savings that were largely lost in the crash of 2008. And many of those folks have kids who are doing pretty well in midlife. But it's easy for the kids to get derailed, too, as they try to help their parents get by. We're looking at how to do both, take care of your own retirement while trying to help your parents. Jim Blankenship is a certified financial planner based in New Berlin, Illinois, and the owner of Blankenship Financial Planning. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Carrie.
So let's say you have responsibility. You've responsibility set your money aside for years. You're on track to retire at 65 when suddenly your senior parent needs some financial help. That would set you back as far as retirement plans are concerned. So what should you say to your parent?
Well, it's a very contentious situation many times because we get to this point where our parents are needing help and we are maybe in good shape, but, you know, we don't have a whole lot of extra headroom to work with. What we always do as an analogy here is we look at the airplane oxygen mask analogy. You know how they always tell you if the oxygen masks drop down and someone near you needs help, make sure you take care of your own first and then help the other. So you really need to make sure that your own situation is in a bulletproof situation first before you help out your parents. That doesn't necessarily mean that you can't help them out. And of course, given the nature of relationships and such, that you're going to want to do whatever you can, but you need to just be careful about it and make sure that you aren't damaging your own situation and then causing a self-perpetuating problem.
It occurs to me that most kids grow up without really thinking about their parents' financial situations. They don't necessarily in young adulthood say, okay, so how much do you have in retirement? The whole Medicare thing has kind of exploded with the Medicare copay and the donut hole and what have you. These are expenses that people didn't think that they would have. So how early on should kids start thinking about their parents' financial situation and how they have that talk with them?
It's a good question. One of the biggest problems is that just societally, money or financial discussions are kind of a taboo. With any crisis situation, it always helps to try to head it off at the pass. So it's helpful to just get started talking to your parents about their financial situation, even though it may be a bit uncomfortable, to just begin getting that communication going as early as possible. You know, prior to their retirement, talk to them about their own situation, you know, what they do have set aside, if you can get that kind of information, and how they're planning on dealing with escalating medical expenses and things along those lines. It may be helpful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Actually, I wanted to ask how siblings fall into this. Does it usually fall to just one of the children and the siblings are just kind of there on the sidelines?
It's so variable. You know, it just depends upon what your family dynamic is. You may have several siblings or several children, and only one is really the financial person, I guess, of the group. And as a result of that, it may not be comfortable to have everyone involved with a conversation. It seems to me like in speaking with your parents, it should be a kind of a one-on-one situation, but you should also bring the siblings into the discussion at some stage so that it's not just one person or one family unit trying to help out the parents if there's a dire need.
One of the things that we haven't talked about yet is families living together. In the past, families all lived in the same area. They often lived in the same houses. My parents grew up in houses with their grandparents. Is that part of the equation that we need to talk to our parents about?
It can be, or another alternative is just helping your parents to downsize their own living situation. And of course, as a result of that, hopefully reducing some of their outflows and helping out their overall financial situation. In some cases, bringing the parent in to live with you can be helpful from a medical perspective, especially if they need to have maybe not round-the-clock care, but fairly regular care of someone that has maybe better cognitive abilities than the elder parent might happen to have.
So let's say you've made some sort of decision. You're past the point where you've had that awkward conversation. Your parent needs help. How do you handle that, especially with a parent who may not want help?
Excuse me. That's a very, very tough situation.
Right. They may say, "Yeah, I'm not taking my meds. I'm skipping my meds." Or "Yeah, it's dark because I couldn't pay the electric bill." But they may be like, "No. I'm not taking that check from you." So how do you deal with that?
Right. Well, in some cases, it may be best to try to kind of head that off at the pass and intercept the bill. Pay the bill directly. Whatever you can do to try to straighten out the situation. You know, it's not the answer to not pay the electric bill or not pay the water bill or not pay the doctor bill, these sorts of things. So you may have to become more assertive in a case like that. And what I mentioned about paying directly, that's probably, in some cases, that's the better way to do it than to hand money off to a parent, because there may be some sort of behavioral issue that's going on as well. There may be, you know, they may have decided that playing the lottery is a whole lot better alternative than paying the light bill.
Right. If I'm in that situation and I consider dipping into my retirement, perhaps, is that something that I should even think about doing?
Really shouldn't do that. And at least from my perspective as a financial advisor, we always say you don't want to derail retirement funds to take care of shorter term needs. When you're into retirement, that's when you should be drawing upon the retirement for your own personal needs. If you can't afford it from your regular cash flow, you really shouldn't be diving into your future wherewithal. Like I say, that would potentially cause a self-perpetuating problem, and then we would have our children taking care of us in the same kind of a situation or worse.
Right. It occurs to me that this is how intergenerational poverty starts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've been talking to Jim Blankenship. He is a certified financial planner based in New Berlin, Illinois, and he's the owner of Blankenship Financial Planning. Jim, this has been really fascinating. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Coming up next, an exhibit at Old World, Wisconsin encourages visitors to talk about an issue that's as relevant today as it was 200 years ago, immigration. We talked to the assistant director about the exhibit, which is called The Wisconsin Journey. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In the 1840s, a group of Swedes decided to leave their native country and come to the U.S. The journey was grueling, taking 4 weeks longer because of lack of wind. Unlike many immigrants, this group didn't stay when they disembarked at the Port of New York. Instead, they headed to a lake called Koshkonong and homesteaded land in what is now Jefferson County. The stories of these immigrants are being told in a new immersive exhibit at the Old World Wisconsin in Waukesha County. Anna Altschwager is the assistant director of guest experience at Old World Wisconsin. She leads some of these exhibits, and Anna joins us today. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Carrie. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about the Wisconsin journey.
Yeah, so we call the Wisconsin Journey a guided experience. So it's not an exhibition that folks might be used to where you put your hands in your pockets and you walk around a room on a wall. It is our weekday experience now through the end of October. And when you arrive at Old World Wisconsin, you do this in small groups. We do no more than 12 or 14 folks because it's really important that we have that small group. And you meet this group of individuals. They are all real people. We share their stories, and you actually step into the shoes of these individuals. You get a biography card, so you might be Charles Hammerquist, or someone else might be Sophia Wahlberg. And we travel through the site, and we stop at three separate locations, and you get to hear their story. You get to hear their life. You get to work as a community to explore and face the challenges that they may have faced. And then we open it up into a larger conversation about what do we think they would have done? What would we have done? People reflect on their own immigration stories, both historic and modern. And we talk about what identity means and what it means to be an immigrant to Wisconsin and to feel like you are a Wisconsinite.
The Wisconsin Journey focuses on these Swedish immigrants from the 1840s. Why did you choose that particular group?
A couple of different reasons. One, when we wanted to create this program, we didn't go into it saying, we want to tell a Swedish story. We ideally wanted to tell a story that wasn't currently represented at Old World Wisconsin. If listeners have been there, they know that it's very big, 600 acres and 60 buildings.
Wow.
And originally it was created in the 1970s to represent folk form architecture. So we have Norwegian settlers cabins from 1840s and a Finnish log home from 1910 and a Welsh general store from the 1880s. So it's all these different architecture types that became representative of immigrant stories to Wisconsin. And we wanted to find a story that we weren't currently representing with architecture, with the built environment. And the Swedish story was one of those. But we also knew we had to find a story that had amazing primary sources because we wanted it to be real.
Hmm.
We didn't want to create a fictionalized story that could have been very accurate. But there's something about knowing it's the real people and to allow guests to essentially meet one-on-one these stories and connect to them in such a deep way. And we got really lucky with the primary sources for this community, and so that sealed the deal, that it was the Swedish community and specifically the one that settled in Koshkonong.
So how did you find these Swedish immigrants in particular, and how many? Like, how many did you have to cull down to get the ones that you were going to use?
All right, well, this is where I have to do a plug for the amazing internships that we do at Old World Wisconsin as part of the Wisconsin Historical Society. So this is something my team, the guest experience team, our experience management group, we sat down and kind of put some of these parameters in place. This is what our guests are asking for. This is an opportunity we have to do this type of programming where people are so engaged. And we put all these parameters on paper, and we had an amazing summer intern. We said, go to the archives, see what you can find. And she hit it out of the park. She came back with these resources, some of which are held in the collections of the Wisconsin Historical Society, of which we are a part. There's a collection of journals and letters, and then some are held in other local collections, like wow. The Ford Historical Museum in Fort Atkinson, which is near Lake Koshkonong. And she came back and she said, oh, there's this guy, and he kept a journal, and his name is Tuur Kumlin, and he just wrote everything down. And it's through this main journal that we were able to identify what this larger scope of community was. Who are the people that he talks a lot about? Who are his family? Oh, that guy also kept a journal. That's another point of view. and cobble these things together, along with more boring but important resources like tax records and census data. And it's through all these primary sources that this community came to life for us.
So there's this guy, he kept a journal, has to be like gold to a historian.
Absolutely.
I have seen the promised land, and it is this.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because that really was Ture. He is from Sweden. He was born just after the turn of the century, early 1800s. And somehow he found out about Lake Koshkonong, and specifically the natural history of it and the birds. And we joke here that Ture is a little bird crazy. He's so fascinated by the natural world. He studies it. He's from a pretty decent family. He's well-educated, and he has this deep, deep passion to go and study the birds and the wildlife of what is then the territory of Wisconsin. And he gets on this boat in Sweden with a couple of folks he knows, and many he never has met before. And somehow when they arrive in New York, a whole group of them come with him. So he must have given a great sales pitch.
Yeah, he must have.
On the boat. Because eventually he comes with this larger community of folks who come over on the same vessel, the Svea, and they settle here in what he thought was the promised land, specifically for birds and bird watching. His journal is full of birds.
Anna Altschwager is the Assistant Director of Guest Experience at Old World Wisconsin. We're taking your calls about your family's immigrant experience. Where did they come from? Did they sail on a boat, and were they perhaps waylaid because there was no wind, as in is the case for this group? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. One of the things that fascinates me, Anna, is that he did choose Lake Koshkonong, which is not on, it's not anywhere near really Lake Michigan, especially when you consider how hard it was to travel in the 1840s. Like, where did he find out about that? And also, how did they get here?
Lake Koshkonong is beautiful and great for birds. It's not ideal farming land. And it is a little bit further in from the port. So how they got here, the boat that this community traveled on, they all traveled here, our core characters, and I say characters, they're not made up, they're real people, but our core group of folks, they all traveled on a single boat that left the port of Stockholm in 1843, and it was called the Svea, which is S-W-E-A, the Svea. And Svea is a term almost like Columbia, in that it's this female embodiment of Sweden and Swedishness. So they get on this boat, and it is purported to be a 4 to 6 week journey from Stockholm to the port of New York. The boat is not in great condition. The travelers did not know it at the time, but the boat had actually already been condemned. But it sailed anyway, and they were actually the last successful passenger voyage of it.
They were the last successful?
They were the last.
Which means there was an unsuccessful passenger voyage?
It does mean that, yes. They did not know this at the time.
Okay.
So they get on this boat. They have paid their money. It is a 4 to 6 week journey. 10 weeks later, they arrive in the port of New York. It is one of the worst crossings I have ever read about. Terrible, terrible storms paired with being stuck in what's called the doldrums. So it's no wind, no current. About 4 weeks, so a month of just sitting on this boat.
Water everywhere, not a drop to drink.
Yeah. And their water goes off, and their food goes off.
Right.
And so they're essentially starving. And there are journal accounts of them setting their laundry out on the deck. So when it eventually does rain, they catch the rainwater and they have to drink that. One of the characters that guests will experience while taking the Wisconsin journey has year-old twins with her on this journey who do survive the journey. But if you can just imagine having year-old twins,
no.
In addition to seven other children on this boat.
Oh, seven other children, you said?
Yes, quite a large family.
Okay.
Quite a large family. So they eventually arrive in New York sometime in early August of 1843. They then travel via the St. Lawrence Seaway and some canals to get to the port of Milwaukee, so all via boat. Once they're in Milwaukee, then some of the men of the group travel overland to Lake Koshkonong establish their claims, work through Homestead Office, and then come back to Milwaukee, get everybody, and then head out to Koshkonong. It's this time of year. They arrived in Milwaukee at the very tail end of August, early September. So essentially 175 years ago this week. Wisconsin weather, we all know it.
Right.
Time's ticking. They have to establish homes. They have to find a place to live. So it was not the best time of year to be arriving.
But you know what? They came from Sweden, wasn't it? Isn't it colder in Sweden?
You know, they knew snow, but they had homes in Sweden.
That
they
is
had
true.
Spaces.
That's true.
So
they couldn't just find a realtor in
Costco. They had a lot of work to do. Yeah, not that early. And that's something that does happen. I'm not sure if callers will call in with their own immigration stories, but when you get later waves of European settlement to Wisconsin, we have this vision that everybody hand-hewed every log and built every home. There were smaller starter homes, essentially, that arrive in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and buy a small home to get started or rent.
Okay, you know what? We're going to talk about that in a moment. We are talking to Anna Altschwager, who is the Assistant Director of Guest Experience at Old World Wisconsin. We will be back to talk about this exhibition. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. A new immersive experience at Old World Wisconsin puts you in the shoes, or maybe lack thereof, Swedish immigrants who came to Wisconsin in the 1840s. It also asks visitors to reflect on their own family's immigrant stories. Where is your family from? What made them leave? Where they left? And how were they treated when they got here? 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call and share your stories. You can also email your stories at ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking to Anna Altschwager. She is the Assistant Director of Guest Experience at Old World Wisconsin. Anna, we do have a call right now. Tom from Burlington, welcome to the program.
That's a wonderful experience when you go into the Old World Wisconsin. With kids, they remember this thing because they're actually there. The tactile thing and the smelling and it's something they'll always remember. But I grew up near Lake Koshkonong. My father had a good friend and he was a hunter, and he moved up there. And his wife loved to fish. She'd get up at 6 o'clock or 4 in the morning, and they'd fish. There's deer up there. It's a wonderful place. But to the point of coming from Norway or from Sweden, the time Sweden is way up there near the North Pole. There's part of it is dark, at least 6 months out of the year. And it must have been an amazing experience for these people to come to Wisconsin and have daylight, 24 hours of daylight, you know. Anyway.
That's awesome. That's actually a really good point, Tom. I appreciate that. Anna, yeah, they did see daylight here. I mean, yes, it's cold in Wisconsin, but it was nothing like they had in Sweden. And once they built their homes, were they okay?
Eventually, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at a map, you can really see on the latitude how different Sweden is from where we are.
Right.
I always like to remind myself with Europe in general that Chicago is about at the same level as Madrid.
Indeed.
So just to kind of wrap your head around what's north and what's south. But I love Tom's point. Tom, can you do commercials for us? Because yes, thank you. It's that sensory engagement, and that's something that we could share the story of these Swedish immigrants in a conference room. It's the content. But we choose to do it out on the ground in these historic spaces, because even though they're not specifically homes built by Swedish immigrants, we do them in Finnish and Danish homes, and there's something about being in the space. We have you sit around the kitchen table in our 1910 Finnish home when we talk about the challenges that this community would face, and you're smelling the wood smoke, the light is coming through the windows. It's so evocative, and people, they might make an intellectual connection to, oh, well, my grandmother came over in such and such year, or my father's friend came over. But there's something to make that emotional connection, like, oh, this smells like the barn that I knew as a kid. And that emotional connection, it just unleashes these stories, and it makes the connection to these immigrants that are 175 years, 200 years removed from us seem so present and so real. And that's really our intention, is that we understand that, you know, the past isn't over. Those are the stories that make us who we are, and they make us the stories that's who we will become. And especially with politics today and the conversations we're having, and what does it mean to be an American? What does it mean to be a Wisconsinite? What does identity mean? We thought there was great value in giving people this emotional, transportive space and giving them the time to think about this and to hear these stories and reflect a little bit.
So two things come from that. One is that I and my family, actually now that I'm talking to you, we're definitely going to Old World, Wisconsin within the next few weeks before it gets too cold. But also, most of my experience is going to be walking around, right, and just sort of taking stuff in. It's different from the specific exhibit that we're talking about now, where people are given cards and role-playing, correct?
A little bit, yeah. So this is, if you come on a weekday, Wisconsin Journey is the experience. And you can, it happens three times throughout the day, and you essentially can book your space. So you can go to our webpage, oldworldwisconsin.org, and you can sign up for your day and your time, sign your friends up, and kind of lock that in. On the weekend, now through mid-October, we're in our fall fun on the farms. So it's, the whole site is open. There's a lot of walking, but we also have trams, complimentary trams. You can hop on a tram, and essentially it will take you through time, travel through time, everything from 1840 settler cabins to 1910 Finnish immigrants. We have three different German settlements that you can explore, and you are exploring the grounds. You're walking into the buildings. We have experienced facilitators who are costumed individuals throughout the site who are in those kitchens, in those barns. Be forewarned that if you walk into that kitchen, we're going to ask you to help us. So, you know, roll up your sleeves, help us knead the bread dough.
Excellent.
Get out of the oven. We think that if your hands are in your pockets the whole time, you're doing something wrong. So history is meant to be experience. It's a story. So we want you to get all your senses engaged when you visit us.
So the second question I had from what you just said is that are you connecting these immigrant experiences from 100, 150, 200 years ago to the immigrant experiences of today?
Yes. Yeah, when you take something like Wisconsin Journey, when you have that experience, it's a little bit more intentional in that we sit down and there's this conversation at the end, and it's a little bit more guided. When you're here as a general visitor on the weekends, just kind of exploring, our goal when you visit the different farms, I'm going to use the example of our 1870s German immigrant farms, one of my favorites, and it has this great big summer kitchen, and we're very busy in there all summer and fall. And when we're in there, you know, we could just teach you about food. You know, this is what they grew, this is what they cooked, but history is not a list of facts. History is about questioning and exploring and ideas. And so the big idea in that space is we talk about how food is how we express our identity. And this is an immigrant family that, yeah, it's the 1870s when you meet them, but they arrived as kids and they grew up in Wisconsin. They grew up in America. So do they see themselves as German? Do they see themselves as German-American? Do they see themselves as American? And the food that they cook and the recipes available to them are a great way to express that and for us to explore that.
When you, first of all, I want to do a call out here, 800-642-1234. We're looking for your family's immigrant stories. We're looking at your memories, perhaps, as Anna just said, of that barn that you grew up in on your grandparents' property, that you walk into Old World, Wisconsin, and you smell the same smell and you see the same sights. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR. WPR Mornings. I find it interesting, Anna, that I am saying when I call for people to call us or email us, tell us your immigrant stories, because I'm assuming that everybody in Wisconsin almost has an immigrant story, except for the native peoples who are here. And did most of them come from Europe, or did we have immigrants from other backgrounds coming even in the 1800s?
Yes, and. We have these dominant immigration stories. You know, we think Norwegians and we think Germans. But that is us thinking about a specific moment in time and a specific geographic place in time. One of the fantastic things about Wisconsin, one of the reasons I love exploring identity and immigration in Wisconsin, is how diverse and dynamic it is. Not only historically is it just this beautiful mosaic of people, but it continues to be, and it's ever-changing. And so there might be some stories, you know, we all go to an Oktoberfest. You know, that is an identity that kind of comes to the top. But I love the fact that my last name is Ultschwager, and I can go to an Oktoberfest, but I'm not really that German. but I can be part of this culture. We can all have lots and lots of hyphens in our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the case historically, as well as in contemporary Wisconsin.
So where did other people come? Where did people come from other than Europe?
Today or historically?
No, historically. I mean, today it's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, you'll get really early on in the 19th century, in the 20th century, you do get early Mexican farm workers coming up here. You get Eastern Europeans coming over. They're smaller pockets, and they're usually chain migration. So it's our family comes over for a specific opportunity related usually to a trade or a type of industry, and then their community comes with them. And we explore a lot of push and pull in immigration. I think a lot of times, especially when we're thinking of European immigrants, we think you see the movie Fievel, where it's like, this, you know, there's no cats in America and the streets are paved with cheese, right? We're all running towards this American dream. There's a lot of people who are pushed here. They don't have other choices. And so when you track things like war and famine, that's when you get a lot of, that's the motivation. It's not that America is the end-all be-all. It becomes a refuge. And there's a lot of trauma that's part of immigration. So when you're looking to paint the most accurate picture of who came from where and put all those dots on a map, sometimes it becomes a map of conflict and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
We become a refuge.
So people came here because of the Irish potato famine and people were starving. People came here because of the pogroms in Eastern Europe and because they were driven out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you talk
about tour who had a passion and they came here because of America.
Right.
He stayed in Sweden and had a very comfortable life. But he came here for a reason. There's push and pull in every story.
We are talking to Anna Ultschwager. She is the assistant director of guest experience at Old World Wisconsin. She's talking to us today about the Wisconsin journey. We're going to take your calls, 800-642-1234, about your family's immigration experience. Where do you come from? What are your memories that your grandparents told you? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or WPR Mornings is the Twitter handle. We'll be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We are talking about an exhibit that runs through October called Wisconsin Journey. You can find it at Old World Wisconsin, which is in, where is this, Anna?
It is in one of the most beautiful parts of the state. It is in Eagle, Wisconsin. We're actually part of the Kettle Moraine State Forest.
Okay.
And if you're not familiar with where Eagle is, it's essentially, if you make a triangle between Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago, we are right in the middle.
You're right in the middle. So I looked you up on the map, and I noted that you were about an hour from Madison because that's where I'm coming from, and I needed to know how to get here. But you are doing this Wisconsin Journey experience, and you're following a group of Swedes who came to Lake Koshkonong. We've got some callers, and there are some other questions I want to ask you. So let's take Elmut. Elmut, welcome to the program.
Hello.
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 Hello. Can you hear me, Elmut?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Just go ahead and tell us your story.
My parents came over from in 1953. My mother was German. My mother is German. My father was Russian and Latvian. My father was quite a bit older than my mother. He had fought with the German underground.
Wow.
During World War II, which nobody ever hears about.
Mm-hmm.
Then later he joined the Russian army to fight the Nazis. My mother was in the Hitler Youth when she was 7 years old because she said at that time you did what you had to do if you wanted to see another day.
Right.
Anyway, when they moved, they went to Staten Island there, and then they came to West Central Wisconsin, Cochran, Buffalo City, Fountain City area, and they basically were around that area. They were sponsored by a church, and then they had a job at working for a farmer, a widowed farmer with many children.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, from the working conditions and stuff, she kept getting pneumonia, and the doctor said, you're going to have to get her off of that, because otherwise it just isn't going to work. And anyway, so then they moved to town, and in the early 60s, I went over to Germany when I was like 4.5 years old with my mother's aunt and her new husband to meet my grandmother, and my grandmother came back.
Wow.
That was about a couple years later, actually, but
Elmut, I thank you for this story. We're kind of running out of time, and I want to get a question in to Anna. But Anna, that's an interesting thing that a lot of people came here like his grandmother did and got sick and had to change their lifestyles or got sick and then left their families strapped.
Yeah, and that's something that we see a lot throughout the different journals and primary sources. And I just want to thank Elmut for sharing that story. I think it's really important that we think about these family stories as an ongoing story. You know, that we explore stories from the 1840s. This is a story from just after World War II. Mm-hmm. There are stories of, you know, Syria right now that are going to be somebody's history someday. And then to keep sharing those stories and keeping them so we can connect to them is so important. So sickness and illness and accidents and death, they're pervasive. So one of the things we do in Wisconsin Journey is you meet them right away. You meet all these folks in 1843. And then we take a break. We travel through time, and we meet them again in 1847. So they've been here for 4 years, and we share some new records. And there are names added the family list.
Good.
You know, they've gotten married. They've had children. They're 4 years, they've settled here, you know, what does their life look like? And there are some names that are missing. And we kind of explore what happened.
Okay, we're going to tell people where this is, and it ends in October. We will have a link on our website. Anna Altschwager is the Assistant Director of Old World Wisconsin. Anna, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much. Hope to see everybody out at Old World Wisconsin soon.
Yay. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a confusing and exhausting run around Lake Geneva.
Communication can be hard sometimes. Nuances and assumptions can lead to complete confusion. Just ask Heather Swanson. She told her tale of a communication breakdown during an ex-Fabula event, a live storytelling program in Milwaukee.
So have you ever found yourself in a conversation with another person where you're saying the exact same word and you think you mean the exact same thing, only to find out in the very near future that you didn't mean the same thing at all? Yeah, well, so the first time I visited this quaint town in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, it was to see my sister who had just moved there. And she was telling me, well, you're going to love this town. It's got this cute lake, and it's got a trail that goes around it. And you are going to love to run around it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. I just started running not long ago. I'm down with that. And she's like, oh, that's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun, and it's only a couple miles from our house. And so I got up in the morning, and I ran down to the lake, and it felt like more than a couple of miles to get there, but I was feeling good. It was a beautiful summer morning, but it was also a foggy summer morning, so I couldn't see the lake. But I started off on the trail, and I was running like a gazelle. And I was running, and I was running, and I was running less and less like a gazelle at this point, and more and more like the creature from The Hobbit. And I had run out of water a while ago, and I was starting to talk to myself, like, my God, how big is this cute lake? I was considering swimming across the lake, and I had no idea how far I had gone. All I knew at this point was that this was the furthest I had ever run in my entire life. And just at that point, the fog had started to rise off the lake, and I had this beautiful view of the lake. And to my right, there was this gigantic bay. And to my left, I could see all the way across the length of the lake. And it was at this moment I realized, this is a big lake. I saw this family up ahead a little ways playing bag-o, so I hobbled my way up there, and I could barely talk. My mouth was so dry. I was so thirsty, and I'm like, excuse me. I'm sorry, but could you tell me how big this lake is? And they're like, oh, it's 20, 21 miles. Where did you start? I kind of grunted and pointed in that direction, and they're like, oh, well, it, great news. You're a little more than halfway around. And they're like, yeah, that's great news. Thank you. So nevertheless, I persisted. And 6 hours and nearly 32 miles later, I made it back to my sister's house. And she's like, where in the hell have you been? And I said, I told you I was running around the lake. And I said, well, you told me I would enjoy running around the lake. And at this point, I could barely walk. So I'm like, I did not enjoy running around the lake, and it was not fun. And she's like, you ran around the lake. Yeah, I ran around the lake, as you suggested. She's like, Heather, no, I didn't mean run around the lake. I meant run around the lake. Thank you very much.
Heather Swanson's story comes to us from Xfabula, a storytelling organization in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
I think that was funny. So a similar thing happened to me recently. I took a bike ride around the trail of Lake Mendota, but there is no trail that goes around Lake Mendota. I learned that the hard way. Thank you, Maureen McCollum, and also thank you to Anna Altschwager for talking to us about the Old World Wisconsin experience. Also, I want to point out that Helmut's grandfather fought for the Russians in World War II. That had to be incredibly grueling, and I thank him for sharing that story with us. I am Carrie Kaufman, and it is the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.